This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
All right, straight off of his 10-7 round with Felger on Felger and Maz this week, my man Greg absolutely beat the bag out of Felger. This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today. Use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. And do us a favor. If you like the pod, you enjoy what we do, you want to support it, head on over to Prize Picks, sign up using that code CLNS, and it will help us tremendously. All right, Greg, before we get into the Ron Wolf way and maybe some of the things that happened with you on Felger and Maz this week, let's start with the business at hand, and that is Calvin Ridley. What happened with Calvin Ridley? How did the Titans swoop in? What did you hear?
Okay, so just to sort of recap, I had heard probably sometime like noon, 1 o'clock, what I was told was the Patriots had made a substantial offer to Calvin Ridley. They were in competition with the Jaguars. Their offer was better than the Jaguars, or at least significantly better, is, you know, what they believed. And what they were being told was that, or at least what the NFL scuttlebutt was that Calvin Ridley really wanted to stay in Jacksonville. If those were the two options, he really wanted to stay in Jacksonville. I was told it was personal reasons. I think it was, it had to do with his wife, who, you know, owns her own businesses. You have to understand, Calvin Ridley's from Florida. He went to Alabama, played at Atlanta, played in Jacksonville. I think his wife's from Huntsville, Alabama. So, you know, maybe they weren't crazy about leaving the Northeast. If that was the two options was, you know, staying in Jacksonville or going to the Northeast. That was my understanding, that they weren't crazy about it. Now, is that the truth? I don't know. That's what I was told. You know, could it have just been an agent ploy that they had a really good offer from the Patriots in hand and they just sort of prolonged it, strung out the clock a bit to see if anybody jumped in with stupid money at the end? You know, could be. It could have been just a ploy. You know, I will say, well, first of all, he going to Tennessee, now that we know, that is in the South. That would be in the, you know, sort of, I want to remain in the South. Maybe it wasn't what I don't want to remain in Jacksonville. I'd like to continue in the South where I've lived my entire life. That sort of thing. You know, but one thing I also want to point out, and I'm not saying that there was anything untoward or anything. There are relationships all over in this business, but it should be pointed out that Rand Carthon, who is the GM of the Titans, is represented by the same firm that Calvin Ridley is. Now, they don't have the same agent. I will point out, they don't have the same agent. And Athletes First is so big. Rand Carthon is represented by Sean Kiernan. Calvin Ridley is represented by David Mugaletta. You know, Athletes First has dozens of agents on their side. And there's not a whole lot of overlapping. Like, you know, Trace Armstrong does coaches and, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm just saying it should be pointed out because the Titans sort of came out of nowhere. Now, then again, it wasn't like they just came in with like $1 million more dollars. I mean, they came in with $50 million guaranteed. To me, that's the key number. It's always the key number in football contracts is, what's the upfront guarantee? And this is what's been reported. We don't know what the actual contract terms are. But so I think it came out like that the Jaguars AAV, average annual value, was 23. Burt Breer reported the Patriots were at like 22. The Jaguars were less than 20. So it seems like the Patriots were close. But the key number, like I said, is $50 million guaranteed. To put that into perspective, the only NFL wide receiver in history that has more guaranteed money in their contract is Tyreek Hill at about 52, 53 million. So we're talking about an unprecedented guarantee for a guy who missed part of a season with mental health issues and was suspended for gambling and is turning 30 this year. To me, that's where the breakdown was, that the Patriots had a line in sand. I'm thinking, and I don't know this, but the thinking in NFL circles is that the Patriots were either around 40 or just north of 40 in terms of guaranteed money. And at the end of the day, I mean, the South and the guaranteed, you know, almost record-setting guaranteed money for the wide receiver position, they lost out. And, you know, it's disappointing, but I'm not going to criticize the Patriots for missing out. I don't think it was over $1 million. I think it was over the guarantees. And I'm sorry, but there has to be a line in the sand. You can't pay anything for any player, and the Patriots put a value on this. I do want to point out, Nick, that if they would have signed him to $22 million a year and $40 million guaranteed, I would have said, this is a risk. They are out there. They are risking. This is rich for this player. Most people thought this player was going to be around $16, $17 million a season. So that the Patriots had gone well above that shows that they were being aggressive. They weren't cheaping out. And that they ended up losing to basically a historical contract offer. It sucks. I'm sure the fans are disappointed, but it's hard for me to criticize the team over that.
A lot to unpack there. Let me first start off by saying I don't think the Patriots are cheap. And I think, you know, when we look at this offseason, I'm judging what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. I've heard the cash spending. We've all heard the cash spending. 2-6 screams it every day during a football season for the last 10 years. We know. Okay. But I'm looking at this specific situation. This is not being cheap. Being cheap is not getting on the phone. Being cheap is lowballing somebody. That's being cheap. There's an analogy that I like to use, and it's the car analogy. If you walk out onto a car lot and you're willing to pay, let's say you have $100,000 in the bank, you're willing to pay $60,000 for this car because you think that's what the car is worth. That's the price that you have set. Somebody walks into the car lot when you're about to purchase that car and throws $70,000 down on the table. Do you add $10,000 or do you jump over that person and say, I'll pay 72? That would be an impulsive decision. Now, some people would. I can only speak for myself. I'm frugal. I'm disciplined. If I set something and I say it's going to be $60,000, that's what I'm going to do. I've done a lot of house shopping with Kelly across the country because we've moved a number of times. We might fall in love with a house and say, this is what we want to spend. This is what we might be willing to spend. We'll go a little bit over that. But when it hits a certain point, you walk away. Everybody does that in their life. Everybody does that when they run a business. So you set the price. And thinking of that, I thought the price was very fair, Greg, more than fair. I said, look, I wanted Calvin Ridley. I tend to like him more than a lot of other people. But I said over and over and over again, my ceiling would have been about $20 million per year. And if you're looking at guaranteed money, that's precisely what the Patriots offered. They were going to give him $40 million guaranteed for the first couple of years of the contract. That's $20 million per year. I think that is a great offer to Calvin Ridley. Because of the Titans jumping in and dropping $50 million on the table, no, the Patriots should not go from $40 million to $55 million to please Calvin Ridley. That's bad business, okay? And it's not being cheap. I want to ask you about this, though, Greg. I found it interesting. I want your thoughts, since obviously you're a reporter. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't do as much inside scoopage anymore like you used to. But Jonathan Jones at CBS, you and I kind of laughed and mocked the whole dark horse thing. Well, we were both wrong. Egg on our face.
Yep.
It was a dark horse. But mm-hmm. I bring that up because Jonathan Jones had a very peculiar tweet before the Calvin Ridley decision came down. He tweeted saying the current sense is that, you know, Ridley is looking at Jacksonville, blah, blah, blah. But then he brought up cost of living and taxes. That stood out to me because I've seen a million people tweet a million tweets breaking news in football. I have not seen many people tweet out cost of living and state taxes. To me, that was a message to the Patriots from Ridley's agent through Jonathan Jones to tell the Patriots, well, if you want to be in the ballpark, you got to account for your cost of living and state taxes as well. So if you think you're close, you got to keep upping the ante. What did you take from that weird tweet?
So I do remember seeing it. I don't remember thinking much at the time. I do I do see your side of it. That, you know, that could be a signal to the agent. It could be. My first thought, though, was that it was from a Jaguar source that was basically saying, like, yeah, our offer might be below what the Patriots are offering, but when you factor in cost of living, taxes, things like that, we're pretty much in the same ballpark. So, like, we feel comfortable that he's going to want to remain here. So I think, to me, that the way I read it is that that's from a Jaguar source. And to me, it looks like the Titans came out of nowhere on both teams at the end of this.
That's a good point. It's a fair point. Could have come from Jacksonville as well. I just thought it was very specific and hadn't really seen something like that before. When we're talking about cost of living, when we're going down to the cost of living, okay, like, what are we doing? And if you are looking at that, then, you know, from the Patriots standpoint, if cost of living and state taxes were a thing during this negotiation, if they were, then the Patriots would have had to pay even more than Tennessee was willing to pay. You would have to pay $55 million, $58 million in guaranteed money to account for some of those things to be a little bit closer to the Tennessee deal. So I do think that's part of the conversation, by the way. I know some people go, oh, that's a bunch of crap. I disagree. So just to make sure, your line, would your line have been $20 million for Calvin or below that?
So in terms of guaranteed money?
Guaranteed money, it's 2 years.
So just to give people some background on this, so Tyreek Hill is at 52.5 fully guaranteed.
Yep.
Stephon Diggs, $48 million. DJ Moore, $42 million. Debo, $41 million. Chris Godwin, $40 million. Amari Cooper and AJ Brown also at $40 million. I probably would have been comfortable going a little bit north of 40 to secure the player, maybe 42. That would put you third among fully guaranteed money in the league. That is a really rich contract. Now, again, I would have pointed out if the Patriots got him for that, I would have said, this is a risk. They are overpaying for this player who you're not even sure is a number one. Certainly very talented. Like, where do you, he's not a, you know, boundary dominating, you know, X type of receiver. He's more like, you know, Stephon Diggs, that type, but it would have been a risk. And I would have pointed that out. But there's no way, Nick, there's no way in hell I would go to $50 million guaranteed for Calvin Ridley. No way. And to me, that's what the Patriots said at the end of the day.
What's your pushback when people say, it's not your money, Greg, they got plenty of money. Just get the player. What's your pushback on that? Because you know a lot of people love that echo chamber.
Yeah, they do. To me, and I understand, it's the fan sentiment. The fans want to play fantasy football. They don't even look at the price tags. It's just like you have to have some discipline. If you're just throwing money around, you leave problems down the line. If you give and look, I've always praised Bill Belichick for this. Do I think he sometimes took it to the extreme about contracts and how they influence the locker room? Yeah, because he never even made exceptions for the special guys that everybody would be like, all right, yeah, he's paying him a lot more money. Of course he is. He's really good. So, like, Bill took it a little bit too far. But, you know, you get the $50 million guaranteed, you know, what's going to be next? I mean, you know, what's Christian Barmore going to want if this guy comes in from Jacksonville where he hasn't really done a whole lot?
Yep.
Has been in trouble before. You're giving him $50 million guaranteed? Well, that's where it's starting for me. All I've done is play well here. I haven't gotten in any trouble. All I've done is kick ass up front. You know, maybe Ramondre Stevenson, maybe his price tag goes up. But I just think if you're a real organization and you are interested in sustained success, which is really the goal of every organization, some just play at lip service, but that's the goal. You want sustained success. And that you have to have some financial discipline. Now, Nick, at the end of the day, this is going to be a great litmus test. Look at what the Titans are doing. They're in a very similar position to what the Patriots are doing. They are going the fan-friendly, media-friendly route of doing a lot of different things. You know, in turn, they got a cornerback, they got a wide receiver, they paid DeAndre Hopkins last year, which we both would have done if we were GM of the Patriots last year. Yep. They got the running back. They have Will Levis. They still have the number 7 pick. Like, you know, they are definitely doing the aggressive rebuild. The Patriots are doing the Ron Wolf way rebuild. We'll see where both teams are in 3 years. You know, Elliot Wolf and Gerard Mayo could be fired, or Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan could be fired. We'll have to see how it works. They are doing it away. The Patriots, it's boring as hell. We've talked about this. I've talked about it. It is boring as hell. It is going to come through the draft a vast majority of the time. But that doesn't mean it's wrong. It worked for Ron Wolf. It worked for Ted Thompson. It worked for Brian Gutekunst. Elliot Wolf thinks it's going to work here. We'll see. It's not going to be sexy. It's not going to be great for sports talk radio, but there is a method to this madness.
Well, I would say that Tennessee, they're stuck doing it this way because they actually were executing the Ron Wolf way at wide receiver, and they decided, if you want to talk about cheap, being cheap is not giving A.J. Brown his contract extension. Like, you drafted the guy, you developed him, one of the best receivers in the game. The idea is, when you do that, you keep him in-house. You pay him the money. You keep him happy. They should have had A.J. Brown, and they should have just said, that's it. He's awesome. We want to keep him. But they thought, let's reinvent the wheel. Let's ship him to Philadelphia. Let's draft Traylon Burks in the first round or whatever. That blew up in their face, and now they're stuck paying DeAndre Hopkins last year, which wasn't a bad deal, but they had to pay DeAndre last year, and now they're going over the top and paying Ridley this year because it all stems from not keeping their core, not keeping the guy that they drafted. So that is on them.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. This week on Prize Pick, I'm selecting Stephen Curry for more than 29 points, Caitlin Clark for more than 30 points. Yeah, you can cross streams, cross sports, all that stuff. LeBron James, more than 7 assists. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Make sure you use promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
About the approach, though, Greg, I wanted to ask you, what do you take from it that the Patriots were not only in on the conversations with Ridley, but that they were willing to offer $40 million guaranteed?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're looking for a silver lining in this as a Patriots fan, you are saying for the first time in decades, the Patriots are willing to spend at wide receiver, that they look at that as a premium position, that they are willing to pay for it. Now, did it work out here? No, but at least you know now that Elliot Wolf and Gerard Mayo looked at this roster, and we heard Elliot Wolf talk about, you know, we need to weaponize the offense. They looked at it and they said, you know what, to really jumpstart this offense, we need a dynamic wide receiver on the outside. We would prefer to go the draft route with that, but just to protect ourselves, we're going to go get the best guy in the market. And they made a, I would say, more than significant offer, more than market value offer on a player. And so to me, that's encouraging that it's not just going to be, you know, taking the Devontae Parkers and Juju Smith-Schusters off the trash pile, even though they might have to do something akin to that now for this season in the short term. But they are serious about weaponizing this offense. It didn't work here, but that doesn't mean they're going to stop trying.
What's the pivot?
It's a great question. I mean, we have Josina Anderson's tweet from obviously a Patriots source that says that they have moved on and that they were going to concentrate now on the draft, and included that splashes are made in wins and losses. I think that It's interesting. I think that's their initial reaction to this, that like, God damn, we lost out. And there's nobody else really close on the market. I mean, you can go get Hollywood Brown, but he's not the same level. And he's more of like a $10, $12 million a year player. You know, you could go Mike Williams, who was released from the Chargers on like a 1 year prove it. He's coming off a knee injury, but when he's right, he's dynamic. I don't think that Keenan Allen's available from the Chargers. Like we talked about before, Cortland Sutton of the Broncos is a guy that I really like. I think he is a number one receiver. I don't think so. From what I was told, because it was Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, and basically one of them was available. And right. that turned out to be Jeudy. They renegotiated Tim Patrick's contract. I think they prefer to stay where they are with their roster, but I would still call. I mean, because to me, he is a number one receiver. He is a very physical outside receiver. You have to account for him, and he makes $13.5 million the next 2 years. And you see what happens while you're drafting. And then if you get to the end of it, you want to re-up him, okay. But I would definitely try for that. But outside of that, Nick, I think it's, you know, just look at the Packers under Ted Thompson. Look at the Packers under Brian Gutekunst, the Christian Watsons and Jalen Reeds and who's the other guy? I can't think.
They got Wicks.
But anyways, Wicks and, you know, Romeo Doubs.
Yep.
You know, all these guys were draft picks where they're just like, they just played the kids. And now, look, they're blossoming to with a young quarterback. Where you're like, they have something really good and sustainable for years to come. So I think, you know, probably the second round pick, multiple picks in this draft, I think they will identify guys.
A lot of people heard you talk about the Ron Wolf way. You touched on it already this podcast. I want to mention a team here, Greg, and get your thoughts. I said this on my podcast today, the Nick Cattle Show, if you want to check it out. I know many of you do, and I appreciate that. I was looking this morning. I kind of had an epiphany. I don't know why it took me so long to have this epiphany into the offseason, but I finally had it this morning. I was trying to think of like, all right, what is Elliot Wolf doing? And I heard your conversation yesterday with Mike and Tony and Jim. And, you know, Mike was very, very upset at you for talking about the 90s Packers. So I started to kind of think of like, all right, what's going on here and what is Wolf doing? I think a better example, maybe not a better example or as good of an example, the Houston Texans, old friend Nick Caserio. And I actually started to look into, it is eerie. I won't go into all the details here, but it is eerie how close this offseason is mirroring the offseason last year for Houston. DeMeco Ryans, linebacker, really good player, gets his first head coaching job in Houston. Of course, you've got Jerod Mayo. The guy that they actually spent the bag on last year in the offseason happened in September was Laramie Tunsil, their best offensive lineman. Who represented Laramie Tunsil? Laramie Tunsil represented Laramie Tunsil, just like Mike Owenu represents himself, and the Patriots paid the bag to Owenu. And if you look at what Houston did, again, I won't go into great detail. If you want it, you can check it out at my podcast. But let's just say this. Generally speaking, Greg, Houston spent their money, and they walked into last offseason, by the way, with the fourth most cap space. A bunch of 1 year, 2 year deals. And you can literally go down the names and you can match name for name at certain positions. Texans, Patriots. And then what did the Texans do? They walked into the draft. They swung big. They hit a home run. They got CJ Stroud. And then they decided to be uber aggressive, moved up for Anderson. Mm-hmm. They drafted Tank Dell, who helped change that offense. They didn't go out and get a splashy receiver. They signed Robert Woods, and they had Nico Collins.
Yep.
So if I'm going to sit there, if I'm a Patriots fan, and I'm looking at, man, what are they doing? Look at the Texans from last year. It's the exact same freaking model. And what did the Texans do this year? They walked in with cap space. They went out, and they got Danielle Hunter. Right, they went out and they spent the $48 million guaranteed on the big ticket. but they started with the foundation. They started with the draft. And most importantly, Greg, they hit the home run with the quarterback pick at the top of the draft.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it is kind of eerie how it's similar. And you know, one thing that I want to point out to the Patriots about, you know, the Packer way, which is really the Ron Wolf way. It's not all that dissimilar to the way Bill Belichick built the Patriots. I mean, he came in and, you know, he took over a team, which we knew had talent, but, you know, guess what? You know, he kept that talent around, used it better, didn't make big money splashes in free agency, went out and got a bunch of mid-level guys to compete, raise the compete level, not sexy guys, any of them that he brought in, and built the team through the draft. I mean, the Patriots were largely homegrown for a very long time, the early part of the dynasty, with, you know, the exceptions of these, you know, mid-level, low-level free agents, you know, find a Mike Vrabel, a diamond in the rough type of thing. And that's what these guys are going to do. You know, really, it's just about, it's about, you need to set the proper foundation. Keep the players that work on the team, bring in guys to compete, coach them up, draft a lot better, and then suddenly things get a lot better very soon. Of course, we all know the quarterback component is there in all of this, and it's huge. And they are focused on that. They will be getting a quarterback in the draft. Is it three? Is it five? Is it six? I don't know. Is it the second round? I don't know. I don't think they know yet. But, you know, I just want to – I'm sure some Patriots fans hear the Packers way, and they're just like, oh, God. It's really not all that dissimilar to what Bill believed. It's just – and what I think is really good and what I think people need to keep in mind is a couple things. Number one, okay, they swung big on the wide receiver. I wouldn't have loved that for a couple of different reasons, because number one, look at what happened to the Raiders and Josh McDaniels when they got the wide receiver before getting a quarterback, and all the problems that happened. Everyone's talking to Devontae after the game. How come you're not catching balls? Like, that doesn't help things. And I think that, in terms of the Patriots, and I just lost my train of thought, which it's been a long week. I forgot what I was going to say.
It's okay. Let me jump in and say this, because I want to go off of what you just mentioned, and we'll have more here on the pod.
Oh, sorry, Nick. I figured out. No, okay. It's just like once the foundation is built, then they will use their cap, their money, to go get difference makers. Once you get to a point where you're 8-8, you know, whatever. All right, we'll go out like Ron Wolf went out and got Reggie White. Ted Thompson went out and got Charles Woodson. Now that wasn't uber aggressive. He was sort of the last person standing, but they brought in Charles Woodson, and he put that team, that 2007 team, over the top. You look at what the Packers right now, Brian Gutekunst, with a roster, if you look at their starting lineup on both sides of the ball, there's only one starter that wasn't drafted by the Packers. That's Preston Smith on the outside at defensive end. Everybody else is homegrown, and they got it to the point with a young quarterback, with young receivers, to where they surprised people. They played really well at the end of the season, and now they feel like they're on the cusp. So guess what they do? They go pay top of the market for safety in Xavier McKinney. They swing big with Josh Jacobs at running back to change the dynamic. And then, you know, all of a sudden you have the best of both worlds. You're getting what you think can really help you and push you over the top. But your basis, the bread and butter of the team, is through the draft, and you're constantly cycling through those guys.
It's every team in the league, mostly. The Niners, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Fred Warner, Hufanga at safety before his injury. You know, yeah, they went out and they signed Trent Williams, but a lot of their talent is homegrown and developed. When you look at Cincinnati, Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Mixon. When you look at Kansas City, Mahomes, Kelce, at first, Tyreek Hill. Defensively, you've got McDuffie, you've got Snead, you've got Jones. All of those guys were drafted by those teams, developed, and now those teams are the cream of the crop. So, like, you just have to really, when you're in it, two things. I think number one, the sports talk radio echo chamber And look, I did talk radio for 11 years or so. I'm not telling you I did it the right way or the only way. There's a lot of different ways you can do it. I did not necessarily approach it the way that a lot of people here locally approach it. And again, that's fine. They're highly successful at what they do, and they do a very good job at what they do. But I do think the nonstop banging, banging, banging of the cheap, 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 this, 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 it ends up becoming so overwhelming that people just kind of fall in line, and they're almost conditioned, many people, saying, oh, well, it's just cheap. It's just, they don't want to go out and get free agents because they're just cheap. And then I also think, Greg, that a lot of people have recent draft PTSD to bring up the idea of, hey, look, they can still weaponize this offense through the draft. Yeah, right. Here comes N'Keal Harry. Here he comes down the... That's kind of the natural go-to, because people just, they don't want to believe that Elliott Wolf and Alonzo Highsmith could actually go into the draft, and they might absolutely swing and miss. But you know what? Wide receivers very deep. Maybe they come out with a one and a two out of this draft. We don't know. It's to just wipe it away and dismiss it. It's a part of the process, and it is the most critical, fundamental part of the process.
Yeah, I mean, like, I understand the frustration of where the team is now. And, you know, everyone has sports talk show radio shows to do. Everyone has tweets to send out today on the state of the team. And obviously, what they have right now doesn't look great. It doesn't mean it's going to be god-awful, but, it doesn't look great. But what if they draft Jaden Daniels third overall? What if they trade up and get an offensive tackle that starts at left tackle from the get-go? What if in the third round they take a guy who pops like seemingly everybody does, and he's out there, you know, balling out as a rookie? I mean, you use the Texans. The Texans had what, the offensive and defensive rookie of the year this year in one draft? I mean, things are going to look a lot different by the time this team hits training camp. I know it's not sexy. I know it's not exciting, but there's a long way to go. Like you said, they could get Tyron Smith to be a 1-2 year stopgap at left tackle. You put Tyron Smith out there at left tackle, all of a sudden things look a lot better on this team. Yeah, they got to do something at wide receiver for sure. They need to weaponize this team, but they don't have to go crazy about it. And there's plenty of time for them to do something that will improve this team.
I will guarantee you that Texans fans were not jumping up and down, going crazy over the Devin Singletary signing, the Robert Woods signing. I can guarantee you that. And I'm sure they had conversations of like, oh, well, you know, you're going to draft the quarterback, but what are you going to do with the rest of the offense? And we saw they popped. And I think they popped beyond what Nick Caserio thought they would pop, but they popped. It's because they nailed the draft. Tank Dell again, CJ Stroud and Anderson. I mean, boom, boom, boom. Offensive, defensive rookie of the year. And Tank Dell, before he got hurt, was having a really good season. So it's perfectly possible to say the Patriots end up with Roman Wilson, Amarius Mims, and Drake May, and all three of those guys pop. And now you've got you've got a stud young tackle, you've got a stud young quarterback, and you've got a really good young receiver. Amon-Ra St. Brown for Detroit, who's a beast. He's going to get the next big fat contract, that receiver. He was, what, a fifth-round pick? Puka Nacua for Rams. He was tremendous a year ago, and he was a fifth-round pick. So teams do it all the time. I know a lot of people don't want to believe it because drafting offensive players here have been really, really difficult over the past, 8-10 years. But that regime, the guy calling the shots, isn't here anymore. So wipe the slate clean, see what these guys do. Not a guarantee they're going to succeed. They could fail tremendously, but this is new. Even if people don't want to believe it, it's new. So let's see what Wolf and Highsmith do.
Yeah, and one thing I just wanted to say, and I probably should have said this at the top, because I've already heard some people chirping on Twitter about, like, you're protecting the team or your craft, you're the... No, what people need to remember, and I'm sure they forgot, because every year they just seem to forget everything. Just like the hiring of Jerod Mayo, just like what the Patriots do as far as building this team in the offseason, I'm not going to be highly critical of it. That's not what I do. What I do is they get to do what they want. The Crafts wanted to hire Jerod Mayo. Okay, they hired him. Now we grade him. Just like Bill when Bill signed all those free agents, or even last year when Bill didn't do that much in the offseason, I said, okay, Bill's back. He gets an opportunity after the Matt Patricia thing. All right, he screwed up the Matt Patricia thing. Now he's bringing in Billy O'Brien. All right, clean slate. Now we're going to judge. That's just the way I do things. It's not, I'm not a sports talk radio host. Like, I don't rant and rave. I don't have my opinions. The draft is the same way. These guys are experts. They draft, sure, I'm going to say who I would have drafted for fun, but I'm going to let, they are entitled to, they have been put in position to run this team, to pick the players, to construct this team. I am going to let them do that. Then we will all grade them after that. I just wanted to point that out for people who are just like, hey, you're not critical of the team. I'm never critical of the team in these circumstances. I let them do their job, and then we'll grade them and rip them after that.
All right, before we move on, I got a couple of things I want to ask Greg. This episode brought to you by Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today. Use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. And don't forget to check out Greg and the others at BSJ. $50 for the year. Before I get to the other needs on this team and what you think as far as where they're at right now, Mac Jones is meeting with the Jaguars media right now. And he was asked about the trade. And here's what he said. Quote, we kind of just decided the mutual parting of ways was the best decision for both of us. For me, it was just about moving on and getting back home, and I couldn't be more excited. And for them, it's about moving forward and turning the page. So really, that's what we decided, and I think it's a great decision. So Mac Jones, his first comments post-Patriots career, there you have them.
Did he say, in stuff?
In stuff. All right, some needs, right? So offensive tackle, what would you like them to do?
I would like, well, Jonah Williams is off the board. So they, you know, and people have to remember, you know, talking to Patriots, you know, sources, you know, I asked them about these things, about quarterback and things like that. And, oh, also, I wanted to bring up something about Justin Fields at some point in time. I forgot to put that on the list. You know, but basically when it comes down to if the Patriots don't move on somebody, like say like Jonah Williams, they don't view him as a left tackle. You know, they at least where he signed, they're like, they don't think he's worth that. They don't think he's a number one left tackle, or, you know, considering they already signed Owenu, you know, so it's the same thing. Like, you know, Saquon Barkley, you know, really talented guy, but Ramondre Stevenson, they're fully expecting to sign to a contract extension. He's their number one back. How much money are you going to put into the backfield? You know, they'd rather have an Antonio Gibson type. So back to left tackle. I mean, I would like to see them get Tyron Smith. I don't really think there are any other options out there. Is that going to happen? You know, I have no idea. I don't, you know, Tyron Smith, you get to these with these veteran players who have been in one place for a long time, especially a southern city like Dallas. A lot of them are like, what, I'm how old, battling injuries. I'm going to go all the way up to Boston, to Foxborough for 6 months out of the year. Do I really want to do that for me and my family? I don't know. Should I just retire? Should I wait out for other options? So I don't know.
Becton, Humphreys, any interest in those guys?
Who's Humphreys?
DJ Humphreys.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, possibly. I mean, these, you know, he's okay. You know, Becton is a guy we talked about before. I mean, the talent is just so awesome. You know, you're going to need intel on, you know, sort of what the issues are there. Do they have any of that on the staff? It looks like they're trying to add guys that they have background with. You know, I will say that Cleveland, considering the background that all these guys have, there is a tackle on their team.
Is it
and I
Conklin?
Can't find him. Yeah. Not Jack Conklin. I think I was looking at, where is it? He's not listed on here as a free agent. I don't know if he signed somewhere. But anyways, there was a backup tackle that played some last year because of all the injuries on that line. And, you know, maybe they bring him in to compete. But I think it's, you know, I think it's going to be on the draft. I would like to see some sort of veteran in here to plug the hole for now, give them options, raise the compete level, but we'll have to see what they do.
By the way, DJ Reader, and I don't think any of us thought he was going to be an option, especially after getting Watson to town with that short-term deal to replace Lawrence Guy in the rotation. But DJ Reader just agreed to a two-year deal with the Lions. So Detroit is adding DJ Reader for the next couple of years. Meanwhile, defense, Greg, free safety, cornerback. You hearing anything? Is there going to be any movement there?
I have not heard very much on that. I think to me, it sounds like they like where they are. I mean, I always said, and I think I said that on the pod going into free agency, like I expect them to be more mid-level players. You know, when I look at my draft chart, which I need to upgrade because I haven't done that in the past like day or so, but you know, really the needs that I have left, the major needs, because they've hit a lot of them, I have to say. Now, they're not sexy and they're not, you know, but my top three are quarterback one, left tackle, and wide receiver one. You know, you've got to, you can almost pencil in the draft, like knocking those off. I have a free safety. Tight end, they're good at now. Well, a draft tight end. I would like a draft tight end. Developmental cornerback, I would leave the draft for that. And a Miles Bryant type, it could be Miles Bryant, could be somebody else. Like, literally, that's the only needs that I have left. These guys have checked off a lot of things. Again, not sexy, and you won't say, oh, yeah, they're so much better here and there. But they've done what I figured they would do was address all of their needs, or almost all of their needs, going into the draft season. And they're almost there, so I expect mid-level to lower-level free agency, they'll bring some guys in. It won't be sexy.
Well, we'll see if that's the deal. I do think what we're also learning, and many of us probably knew this already, but it's pretty tough. If you know, if you do want to recruit top guys, and if the Patriots are in on some top guys, and they reportedly were interested in Tyron Smith, they were interested in Mike Evans, they had some interest in Baker Mayfield. We heard from, you know, sources, according to Mark Daniels, that Baker and Mike Evans weren't that interested in New England. Ridley obviously turned them down, even though they put a pretty good bag on the table for him. It's tough, man, coming off of a 4-win season, having to reset your entire offense. It's not the easiest thing in the world, especially when you're in the Northeast, to sell people on this opportunity. We have to keep that in mind. I know it's all, they're cheap and it's all about the money. These guys are making personal decisions as well. I know they're professional athletes and they make millions, but they're making personal decisions and they want to be happy and they want to play for a team that's competitive and they want to know what's going to be around them. All right, let's close it out with Justin Fields. You said you had a couple things you wanted to say about him.
Yeah. So that, you know, there's a lot of talk about Justin Fields, and, you know, I mentioned this on Felger and Maz yesterday, but you know, two things just to illustrate, and I'm just looking for the text that I got. So I was asking league sources about Justin Fields and why he has no market. And it's quite evident that he has no market. I thought, you know, maybe the Colts would be a fit considering Anthony Richardson is there and he's kind of, you know, more of a run first quarterback, which Justin Fields kind of is, in terms of scramble to run, not scramble to throw, even though Richardson's a lot more dynamic, you know. But I mean, that they went with Joe Flacco to back up Anthony Richardson. I mean, are you kidding me? And the other thing that people have to have in mind, you know, these people that say like, oh, he's worth it. And like, you know, he's just worth a bet. And the Luke Getsy was his offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
In Chicago.
Yep.
He is now with the Raiders, and the Raiders went out and they said, if Justin Fields was a franchise type quarterback, like a potential, like, oh, and I will say the coaches in Chicago absolutely love Justin Fields. Love his work ethic, love what he does, love him. They obviously don't think much of his talent because Luke Getsy was his offensive coordinator. He goes to the Raiders. If you think that Justin Fields was available, you know, for whatever, a fourth or fifth round pick, if Luke Getsy thought he had franchise quarterback potential, that it was right there, that he improved last year, that he was getting better, that he's on the cusp of it, which is some of the things I hear about Justin Fields. Don't you think Luke Getsy would have stood on the table in Las Vegas and said, bring him in? We're getting a diamond in the rough. Don't you think that, Nick?
But I also think Luke Getsy didn't do Fields any favors by what he did as a play caller with Justin Fields. But that's another topic for another day.
So fair enough. But I just wanted to point out from my league source, who's a personnel executive, who I thought might have interest in Justin Fields. And I said, why does he have no market? What's the deal? And I was told 60% completion percentage, last in the NFL, 30 INTs, 16 fumbles, 135 sacks. That's 3.5 a game in 40 games. Can't process. He isn't accurate. He has to have the offense simplified continually. That's why he has no market. These guys aren't winning championships ever. You have to be able to think and process and throw. So I just, to those people who are standing on a table, and again, look, if the Patriots thought he was worthy to bring in for, you know, throw maybe the Mac Jones pick or something, and they wanted to bring him in to kick the tires or whatever, I would not have a problem with that. But in terms of like going out and, you know, he's your guy and he's going to compete, there's nobody in the league. People with openings have looked at this, have looked at Justin Fields, and not one team has said he has that potential. So that should tell you everything about Justin Fields.
He's Greg. I'm Nick. We'll be back early next week. Enjoy your weekend. St. Paddy's Day weekend. A lot of college basketball next few days as well. But until next time, it's the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Kapp.